I'm Austin Durant, the fermenter.
And I'm Mel Lyons, the farmer.
And this is the Farmer and the Fermenter podcast, pilot episode. So I thought this would be an interesting topic to get two people that have our interests in the same room and just chatting about issues that are relevant to us. Mel, what do you think?
I think it's a perfect topic, and there's a lot that goes on between what you do and what I do that I think is important to bring to the public.
Absolutely. So maybe we should start by having you talk about what you do, the wonderful farm that you're cultivating, and a little more broadly about what's important in the farming movement, and introduce us to the concept of regenerative farming, which is kind of what you've been studying and specializing in, and I think it's a very important thing to inform people about.
Wonderful, thanks for the opportunity. I operate Wild Willow Farm and Education Center. I'm the founder and I direct it, and we're an educational farm, as the name implies. So we're teaching people cutting-edge practices in how to grow food, and not just food, but really growing soil as a fundamental component for having healthy food systems and ecosystems, so that there's compliance between how we're producing food and how we're affecting the ecosystem. So fundamental to our work is growing healthy soil. And this is where our worlds come together, is I'm cultivating high bacteria and fungal and other life forms into the soil quite intentionally and fostering their growth. Because it's being discovered that a healthy soil biome is really important for the health of a plant. And so the concept has been encapsulated in an emerging term called regenerative agriculture. This is levels above organic agriculture. And so we spend a lot of effort and time, and we have curriculum developed to teach people how to grow food in ways that are ecologically balanced, environmentally appropriate, and in harmony with a healthy ecosystem. So in short, it's a practice that can be addressing some of humanity's biggest problems that we're facing. So Wild Willow Farm is really an effort to get this topic into our community.
That's great. That's great. And then, so the farm is located in San Diego. What USDA zone is that?
Yeah. So we're in sight within sight of the Mexican border. We're the most southwest farm in the continental United States. We're about 3 miles from the Pacific Ocean and 1 mile from the Mexican border. You can see the streets of Tijuana right from the farm. So we grow in San Diego, that coastal area. We don't have time off. We grow year round. Unlike most farms in most places. So not only growing year-round, we're teaching year-round.
Right.
Education is really embedded into all of our practices.
I really liked what you said about sort of the concept of the soil as not just a living organism, but a living ecosystem. Because, as you mentioned, that does sort of cross over with tradition of fermentation. So as I teach in my classes, what we're doing is we're cultivating an ecosystem of specific microbes within the context of, instead of the dirt or the earth that you're working with, a jar, or you know, whether that's shredded cabbage or you know, mashed up beans to make miso. So I think it's a very cool analogy to see, you know, to understand that farming and fermentation do have that in common, as do really what we're learning. All life systems, you know, our bodies are made up of, you know, 50 trillion cells, but we have almost double that number of microbial cells that live in and on our bodies. And so we're just, walking mobile biome systems.
Hosts.
But we're hosts, right. Or I like to say, human-shaped clouds of microbes. I think it's fascinating that in both realms, we're starting to understand from a scientific perspective what's happening and how many interactions there are between, you know, different microbes, not in the jar, but also when we consume that, and the microbiome that's in our guts. And then to go further back upstream, the microbiomes that grew the food that we're putting into the jar. So it's fascinating to really see the interconnectivity of these things and how nature really, how operates at that level.
Yeah, and the concept of the living soil biome, now it's been practiced for tens of thousands of years, but it's only in modern ages, the modern farming, when modern farming developed in the middle of the 20th century, that really there was a consequential reduction of the microbiome of the soil through commercial, industrial, agricultural practices. And our food has diminished in flavor and nutrition as a result. So a lot of the organic practices that were developed as a way to address some of the problems of chemical agriculture are now being questioned as being also destructive to the soil microbiome. And that's where this idea of regenerative agriculture kind of emerges, is intentionally making the soil a living being. There's some that consider the soil to be the immune system of the planet. Mm. That it acts as a way to filter out harmful things, to provide nutrients and substances that help plants thrive, to build plants' immune systems. And it's then when we consume those plants, it's part of this continuum. There's a complete circle of life from the soil to the food to the humans and then back to the soil again. So we're not severing the food system from the rest of nature. We're actually including it intentionally and cultivating that relationship.
That's beautiful. And I want to go back to something you said for people who may not know. So you were saying that organic, because I think to most of us, if we can find something organic, we're paying a premium for it. And it's just, you don't have to think anymore. It's just like, nope, organic. I'm good. I think that's good for the environment. There's no pesticides. But you're saying that that's not necessarily the case?
Well, in an ideal world, that would absolutely be the case. However, there's all kinds of interests now intruding in the organic movement that are making that less and less the case. And I want to be careful because I've been an eater and grower of organic food for 40 years. And I think the organic standard is a really important step that we've taken. And it's really the only meaningful step above no standard at all. The organic standard is the only level of established practices that provide the consumer some assurance that they're being less harmful to the environment. But I have to tell you that anymore, commercial organic is not helpful to the environment, mostly. And there's a lot of practices embedded in modern organics, industrial organics, that deplete soil, that really do not help produce the microbiome that I feel is really important for a healthy ecosystem.
So sorry to just interrupt. You're saying that organics as a practice does not take into account the health of the soil at all?
It's in the organic standards, it's mentioned as a goal, but there's really no enforcement or requirement that organic farmers build the microbiome of the soil. And in fact, most of the practices used on organic farms or commercial farms are virtually the same. And in the modern organic world, a lot of the practices are just the same with different chemicals. They're not really taking advantage of nature or building the farm based on a natural principle of the soil biome. So I've become increasingly disenchanted with what organic has become. And so this kind of spurred me to help change that system and develop or help promote another standard, which is this regenerative organic standard.
Cool. Yeah, it definitely sounds like it's got a more holistic approach than the current organic standard. How can I, as a consumer, be more careful about vetting maybe sort of, I don't know what you would call good organics from ones that you think that in your experience are not really practicing, good soil hygiene or whatever.
That is a problem, and there's really not a very universal way to discern the quality of your organic produce. I think always by far the best way to buy organic food is to buy it directly from a farmer at a farmer's market or a farm stand, and then to be able to ask the farmer or his representatives that, how do you deal with pests and how do you treat your soil and do you compost and how are you mitigating against some of the problems that organic practices use chemicals for. There's other means to address some of those common problems that are biologically based, and are you using them? So virtually there's no way when you go to the supermarket or the store sometimes to even know where the food was grown. It could have been grown on other continents. It could be labeled organic, but what is your assurance that the practices are going to be consistent with your ideals? So it's just become harder and harder. So I think, you know, taking control back, learning how to grow food yourself, experiencing some of these practices, but then buying right from a farmer, that has a lot of other advantages I can go into later. But mm-hmm. essentially, you know, get closer to the source as you can.
Great, yeah. And that just spurred me on an idea. What if we, could there be like 3 or 5 questions to ask your farmer? And then maybe, why don't we provide that as a resource for our listeners now, and actually we'll have a link to it at the end, maybe just, and it's literally something you can memorize, and you know, and again, you would know what those questions are, but just something that's, you know, not going to make it seem like we're grilling our farmer, but we want to know genuinely, you know, what their practices are. I mean, how do you think about that idea? You think that's something that people would be helpful?
I make it a practice to question my farmer. And frankly, most farmers who are really growing with practices they're proud of are really forthcoming with how they grow food. Usually, you know, a good farmer is going to be really proud of it. I think the first question I always ask is, where's your farm? Because I'm considered food miles to be an important part of the equation. If the food is coming from hundreds of miles away rather than dozens of miles away, there's going to be all kinds of embedded environmental costs in that transportation. So seeking a farm that's growing food nearby, that food was probably picked yesterday or within a few days and brought right to you. It's going to be picked ripe and ready to eat. And that takes advantage of nature's propensity to ripen food right at the point of peak flavor and peak nutrition. Mm-hmm. And that's something that cannot be replicated when food is being shipped across the continents, across the oceans. You cannot get that same outcome. Food grown that way is engineered to be able to be refrigerated and shipped long distances. And one of the shortcomings of that is it was picked way before it was ripe. And it'll never develop full flavor, and it will never develop full nutrition.
Right. It's, you know, the goal of that is to, the end game is to have something that's cheap and also looks good on the shelf, but that may have no bearing on the way it
and flavor.
And
flavor. Oh, my grandparents had a peach tree in their backyard that I just couldn't eat enough of them. They were so delicious. And then I started buying peaches from the store and just felt like this wasn't the peach that I was expecting. I stopped buying peaches mm-hmm. just because I was just buying disappointment.
Yep.
And I can spend my money on better things. So, but I didn't question it. I didn't question why that peach was deficient, why it didn't satisfy me. And it was only 30 years later that I started to understand that that was an outcome of the changes of the food system. Mm-hmm. And so that set me on my path to do something about it, not just accept that we're going to live in deficient lives. We're going to do something about it. We can change it. We have that much power.
So wonderful. So is that? So it sounds like we're leading up to the origin story of the farm. So how did you get from that moment of, okay, I need to do something about this, to getting, you know, where we are? Maybe not today, but the genesis of the farm.
Yeah. Well, so 30 years after my decision to stop buying peaches, I had a friend who was a farmer, and he called me up one day and said he's going to have a meeting in his living room. This is about the year 2000. Going to have a meeting in his living room to see if we could solve a problem. And so me and a bunch of strangers all met in his living room, and the problem he was addressing was that the land his beautiful farm was on was going to be sold to a developer. And while we didn't save that little farm, it was sold to the developer, as was expected. It got me really interested in being part of the solution. So about 10 years later, we started Wild Willow Farm and Education Center. There was about a 10-year ramp-up to get Wild Willow Farm started, but it's been going about 8 years now, and we're really coming into our stride right now.
Wonderful. That's a great story, and just illustrates that even though we've got a kernel of an idea, that it could very well take years to cultivate. And, you know, just like well done farming, I suppose, like, it requires patience, it requires effort, it requires, you know, diligence. But that's wonderful that you had the idea, and then 10 years later it began, and then 8 years after that, which is today, to see what a success it is, and what a wonderful space that you've built. I've been blessed to be able to do some of my teaching workshops at the farm, and it's just, like I said, it's my favorite venue, of course, to do things, because we are like literally as close as we can get to where our ingredients come from. So we, we can get cucumbers in the summer and teach people how to make pickles, or any time of year. I like to teach kombucha workshops, and we go right to the fields, and we pick fresh lavender and basil, and we infuse our kombucha with the herbs from the farm. So it's just, I mean, this is just my take on it. Of course, there are lots of other classes and things that you offer to teach people the basics of farming, from the soil, like you said, all the way up to, you know, how to grow things properly and season and what to grow and that sort of stuff. In future episodes, we will talk about the metaphor of the jar as the, meaning the jar where we would ferment something, as the mediator between the soil microbiome and our gut microbiome. I think that's going to be a fun episode to tackle.
Lovely. I'm so excited about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I have a gift for you.
Do you?
In honor of our first podcast.
What's this?
I have this. This is something that has taken me years to develop.
Really?
Yeah. But that's kind of part of the story, is that good things take time. And it was 18 years of cultivating community that has led Wild Willow Farm to where it's at. But this is a sourdough starter.
Ooh.
That I've been cultivating for 10 years.
Really? Oh,
and I got it from a local farmer who captured it wild in East County, San Diego.
Okay.
And this has been a culture that's been cultivated for probably close to 25 years.
Wow.
I got it from farmer Barry Logan, who is an iconic hero of mine and my inspiration, who taught me the value of cultivating community and soil and vegetables all together. These are all part of one thing. So I want to give this to you, because I think this is a wonderful starter. I make pizza dough out of it.
Oh, that's right. So yeah, Wild Willow Farm has this amazing wood pizza oven. Was it wood?
Or it's a wood-fired oven.
Wood-fired oven that seasonally there are community events, and Mel fires it up and makes the most amazing pizza. And I knew that it was wild sourdough, but I've not actually seen the mother. But this is, he gave me a beautiful pint jar of just bubbly and delicious looking starter. And I'm going to make some bread with this.
Yeah,
thanks, Mel. Wow.
That was all been refreshed overnight here. So it's quite active. I'd get it in the fridge.
Thanks. Yeah.
Keep the little.
It's funny because, like, sourdough is one of the few things that I don't do consistently, because it's like a pet. Like, it requires not only feeding and care, but, you know, it's like, well, you can't just have your dog, you have to walk it every day. So if you're not using your sourdough starter to make a lot of bread, that's the equivalent of walking your dog, then it can quickly, you know, get, you know, kind of like grumpy. So, but I'm going to do my best to make as many loaves as I can and keep this thing alive. But this isn't the whole thing, right? You've got a mothership back at the farm.
Well, the good news about this starter is it's more like a cat than a dog.
Is that right?
It can take a little bit of negligence.
Okay.
I don't make bread regularly.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
Any
tips for the occasional sourdough maker?
Keep it in the fridge.
Okay, keep it in the fridge.
Keep it in the fridge. Give it a little extra time to wake up. Sometimes I may not feed it for 3 months.
Oh, wow. Really?
Which is, you know, people think that it's not possible, but it really is.
Well, that's
it's a really hardy.
Especially, 25 years sounds okay. Yeah. Well, I will do my best to keep it propagated.
Yeah.
Thanks. Wow, what a gift.
Well, your mother for the kombucha has been going for years.
This is true, right? I mean, I've had, I learned how to make kombucha from Kombucha Mama, who's Hannah Crum. She's the sort of like one of the most well-known kombuchistas in the country. And more or less my SCOBYs have been generations, probably 20 or 30 generations now since I learned from her. And I think it was 2010, but 2011. But yeah, anyway, so that's, of course, similar cultures that we propagate. And sourdough and kombucha are just one of two of the many that are out there.
Well, that's very similar. You know, the food system, the soil system, we're cultivating that. We're culturing soil, and it's a years-long process. And when you get that biological engine going in the soil, you just have to sustain it. And it's the same way with fermenting. Mm-hmm. You keep your cultures alive, and you just keep using them, applying them, expanding them, growing them, sharing them with others. This is where we're growing not just the bacteria or the yeast or whatever it is, we're growing the cultures of community around us.
Absolutely, right. And I think that's another thing that our differing paths that have now come together have in common, which is the need to not only teach, but to create communities that where the knowledge itself will remain, so it's not just beholden to one or two people. And that's my mission, and that's the mission of Fermenters Club, is not only to teach you how and why to make fermented foods, but to create communities that are connected through our guts. I mean, it's got multiple levels of meaning, but I think it's important because I think that prior to our maybe one or two generations back, certainly when we were more agrarian, people just did that naturally. Like, you would make if you were a cattle or a dairy farmer, you would milk your cows and you would have way more than you could possibly consume, so you shared it with your neighbors. And so I think I liked that idea. So when I make a crock of sauerkraut, I try to make 2 or 3 gallons, which is way more than I would consume, but hey, you know what, you know, Mel's got some eggs, or he's got a sourdough starter he can give me, or Kat's got some kale that's grown in her garden. And so I really wanted to help be part of this movement of creating and sharing and centering around foods. And I think that's a large facet of what the farm is about too, right?
Yeah. I think we want to empower people. We can just be consumers and consume the things that other people make. But I think that there's a lot of power gained in learning these skills, these survival skills, these ancient practices dating back to the beginning of human civilization. We've, as humans, have been doing these things, but the memory of that, the knowledge, those skills are being lost as we've kind of gotten used to just going and buying things that we need. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's reduced a lot of our power, our personal power. And then we're also being compromised in the quality of what we buy.
Right.
The food we buy in the grocery store is never going to be as good as what you can grow at home.
Right.
Or grow or get from the farmer at the farmer's market. It will never be as good.
That's true. I think, wow, that's really profound, and I think it's true. I mean, it's true in all life, but maybe to a shorter extent in fermentation. So, you know, you put up a batch of kombucha, it's not going to be ready tomorrow. Like, it's just, you know, it takes 7 to 21 days. So it's a good lesson in not only understanding that not everything in life is instant gratification, but it literally teaches you the speed of nature. And I think it can bring us more into harmony with that once we understand how nature operates and at what rate. I think that's just going to allow us to become more in tune at many different levels.
I love that term, the speed of nature. My gosh, how much have we forgotten that nature has its own timetable?
Right.
We get so used to these instantaneous gratifications.
Right.
I want it now. You know, people want to grow a garden. They want to get their tomatoes now. Well, that ain't going to happen.
That's just not how nature works.
But industry doesn't embrace that concept. Industry thinks that nature isn't important, so most of the tomatoes you're going to buy in the store, even organic ones, are going to be grown in a hothouse with no soil, only water-fed nutrients under artificial lights, because those tomatoes can raise up and turn into tomatoes and turn red and make you want to buy them, but without those natural forces underneath it all. Industry embraces the idea of I want it now.
Right, right. And, you know, and you know, faster, better, cheaper is a mantra of our modern society. And I think in many facets, in many industries, that's a good thing, you know, perhaps, you know, goods that we need to, you know, housing and, you know, there's a need to do faster, better, cheaper. But personally, I'm learning that maybe that's not a virtue when it comes to food, because food intersects with nature. And if you look at applying that mantra and only to the end product and not thinking holistically to the ecosystem, that's why we are where we are today. So you know, I'm sort of reconsidering that idea. I mean, I'm a capitalist, an original capitalist, and I think we're blessed with, you know, cars that are safer than they've ever been and cleaner than they've ever been, and devices that we sit in our pocket that allow us to communicate with anybody. It's wonderful, you know, there are downsides to applying that mentality without thinking about things more broadly and more holistically, when it comes to farming and food.
How humans grow food around the world now is the biggest assault humans do on nature. There's nothing humans do that is worse for the environment than how we grow food around the world. The consequences of deforestation, for instance, just taking over natural lands and turning them into farms, is a horribly destructive practice, and it disrupts all kinds of ecosystems. And then you get into pollution from agricultural chemicals running into our rivers and streams.
Where they should be absorbed into the soil if the soil were healthy, right? So this is and I'm oversimplifying things, but like,
yeah.
Right, we're having all this industrial runoff go into the bodies of water because we haven't cultivated soil, which is more adept at, you know, reabsorbing and reusing water.
Well, it's the consequence of not developing our soil that requires the use of these chemicals.
All right, so it's a kind of a vicious cycle.
Yes, exactly. And by instead cultivating the soil itself as a life source, and stopping to use these chemicals, which virtually all of them are destructive to the biome, that all these runoff and pollution problems are generated. And it's not just the rivers and the streams, it's the soil itself. Mm-hmm. So that really you've reduced something that may have had trillions of living things in a teaspoonful to being inert, basically dead. Most agricultural soils are dead. Because common practices such as tillage and the use of chemicals they just destroy the biome. And so it's the effect of that is that we have to use more chemicals and more tillage. So it's really down a cycle of no return. So we have to stop some of these things.
Sure. So we've definitely covered a lot of different topics. This is in our premiere episode here. So definitely leave some comments as to what topics you guys want to hear about, fermentation related or farming related, and we will we'll get inspired by that and spend a lot more time in each one. So do you feel like this is a good place to end our first episode,
this
Mel?
Has been really fun. I've really enjoyed it and look forward to further conversations.
Me too. And like I said, leave us some comments and let us know what you think. And I think that's a wrap for our first episode.
Thank you. I'm Mel Lyons, the farmer.
I'm Austin Durant, the fermenter.
It's been nice to have you.